Hey, this is Cedric, your host of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And before we get into this awesome chat with David Fraser, the CEO and founder of Citadel Cabins, I want to tell you about our fantastic sponsors. Ledin is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. Ledin.io is the first digital asset lender with the transparency and security of a formal proof of reserves attestation, raising the bar in the space. You can borrow against your Bitcoin if you don't want to sell. You can earn interest if you don't want to sell. Or you can use their B2X program if you want to take advantage of this sideways price action and double your stack. Listeners of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast get $10 free in USDC when you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan today. If you want to see what it's all about, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. You want to secure your Bitcoin from physical disaster and a single point of failure using a CipherSafe seed storage device. CipherSafe's goal is to provide important, tangible security tools for Bitcoin. CipherSafe focuses on securing your Bitcoin with beautiful, elegant, and practical devices. Designed, engineered, and manufactured all in-house. Machined from solid stainless steel. Waterproof, fireproof, rustproof, tamperproof, Cedric-proof. The Cypher wheel is designed to be physically locked with a padlock and comes with a tamper evidence seal, so you can be aware of any attempts to steal your seed words. To keep your sats safe, go to cyphersafe.io and use the code MATRIX to get 10% off your order. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with David Fraser, where we talk about location sovereignty, KYC-free housing, Citadel life, and creating a network of cabins for Bitcoiners to escape, retreat, connect with each other, be surrounded by people who love freedom as much as we do, or just to get off the grid completely.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
David Fraser is the co-founder of Citadel Cabins. Citadel Cabins is famous for small log cabins that can be easily assembled, providing a way for individuals and families to escape, grow, and establish KYC-free location sovereignty and independence. David Fraser, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. How are you?
I'm doing great, Cedric. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be talking with you today. This has been a little bit in the work. I'm also super excited to have you guys as a sponsor. We were chatting a little bit about the show and, I've gotten a lot of great feedback. I'm really careful with the sponsors I choose. And just very recently, one of my best friends was saying, he's like, oh, I think I'm thinking about adding a little space at the house. And I think this Citadel Cabins that you're talking about on the show, it kind of fits. I'm going to look into it. And I think there's a lot of different avenues that can be explored with that kind of technology. And it's not until very recently that I thought a lot about location as a part of the toolkit of the arsenal of like trying to maintain or gather some independence. So sure. I'm excited to get into it. What is, a bunkie? I think you guys, that's what you guys kind of call them. I don't know if that's a Canadian thing or just a logger thing.
Yeah, so it actually is a Canadian thing. The word bunkie originates from Ontario. The etymology traces back to like Muskoka region of Ontario, which is like our kind of cottage country. You'd have this like little crappy house that, people call a cottage or a camp or a chalet, different words for like a second beat up house that you go to in the summer to get away from your place in the city. And then people were building these little shacks behind their cottage and they call them a bunkhouse. And basically what it is like, it doesn't have a toilet per se. It doesn't have a kitchen. It's just like extra sleeping quarters to like shove, the kids or just extra people when they come to visit and that sort of thing. So the bunkhouse kind of became the bunkie. And so in Ontario, we own a company called Bunkie Life and we serve the cottage market really well. And so I was reflecting on me being a Bitcoiner, what do I wish I had? And part of it is that I like an escape area that I could get to in a location sense And so the Bunky kind of fits into that. So we kind of, Citadel Cabin is like the offshoot of Bunky Life. So we have the manufacturing background. We have the whole background with the log cabins. But Citadel Cabins, I kind of created because I'm like, I think Bitcoiners either need this right now or will imminently need this. And every day that becomes more true.
Yeah. Well, why did you build your first Bunky?
Yeah. So I live in just outside, well, used to live just outside of this little town outside of Toronto. So, you know, about an hour outside the country, outside of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And so we had our first kid back in 2015. We had our first child, and it was, the question became, where are we going to put mom and dad when they came to visit? I had my in-laws live 3 hours away. My parents live about 3 hours away. So they couldn't just kind of come for the day. And so they're sleeping on couches. They were, you know, even talking about bringing tents or like yurts with them and stuff. And so I looked at a ton of different options. I looked at tiny homes. I looked into different solutions like tents and things like that. And the concept of the bunkhouse just really worked for what my budget was at the time and what we needed. So I built my very first bunkie in 2015. And then I started renting it on Airbnb right away because I wanted to make it pay for itself, right? And the upswing from that was huge. Like it was booked out. I had to rent it out the very first week I built it, and it was just rented solid. My mom started getting mad because she couldn't come. I was renting it out on her. And then the next year we built a bunch more on our property, and then just kind of spiraled from there. And I realized really quickly, like, these are like awesome investments. They're just like, they pretty much pay for themselves in 6 to 12 months. And they're really relatively low maintenance. I used to be a landlord at a bunch of rentals. And I sold them all. I was like, let's just get bunkies, because it was way simpler. You know, back when I was a slumlord, I'd be super happy if we made like $300 of profit that month, you know? And that was if like nobody burned anything down, the cops weren't called, and, you know, all the horror stories you hear about landlording, I could tell you. But the bunkies are just simple. People would come for very short periods of time on a short-term rental basis, like an Airbnb. And it was just simple and easy. And I mean, I enjoyed doing it. So I had, at one point I had three different units kind of being rented out. And then I started selling the kits themselves, and now I manufacture them and kind of have the full supply chain.
Yeah. What kind of features are important in a bunkie?
So in our area, like Ontario, and this is true of most of Canada, a big key is like being small enough. You don't need a permit, just sneaking under that size. And that's different in different states as well. Like Michigan, it looks like the square footage is like 150 to 200 square feet. You can kind of sneak under. That's a big feature. But for us, like what sets our stuff apart is it's super easy to build. Picture like Lincoln Logs or like a Lego kit, and you kind of snap it together. Everything's pre-cut. All the corners are pre-notched. A relatively even half-handy person could put it together usually in a couple of days with their friends and family. So for us, a big unique selling proposition is we've done a lot of the thinking, and you're just kind of assembling a kit. But in general, if you're talking about bunkies in general, it's just like, you know, how quick can you put it together? How cost-effective is it? And there's, you know, and then how does it fit into the, like the bigger context of your life and your backyard or your farm or wherever you're hosting it?
Right. And I'm imagining these things can be, bunkie could be used as, a getaway space for like maybe a man cave or the grandparents or, just kind of what other kind of uses have you seen people using it for?
Yeah. So for Bunkie Life, as the parent company, I guess we'll say, 80% of people are like, we have the cottage, we need that extra bedroom essentially, right? Or the adjacent bedroom. So that's like the bread and butter of what we do. We do have some people buy them and live in them full time in Canada, which is not for the faint of heart because we get some pretty harsh winters here or there. But people do it and they pull it off. So that's like a small percentage of that remainder. And then there's people that are buying them for the Airbnb kind of income generation purpose. We also sell en masse to campgrounds and golf courses and things like that that kind of do the larger scale short-term rental. And then there's other people that, you know, it's a boathouse. It's a pool house. It's a shed. Sometimes it's a really fancy, cool shed. So there's that kind of use case too. But like I said, the majority of people are just like, it's extra overflow space for friends and family when they come.
Yeah. I love this aspect. I love the year round living in, especially in Ontario. It seems like maybe that's sort of, for some people, maybe I, what kind of other things you have to do to sort of make it, do you have to winterize it? do you provide, is there heating in there? What do you do for bathroom? I love this. And yeah, and it probably gets pretty cold out there.
Yeah. So like we get some pretty harsh winters. So it gets easier. I mean, the further south you get from here, the easier it gets until about, you know, Florida, when you have to worry about termites. I don't think we're the solution for a super southern climate where you might have termites, but for most of the continental US, you don't have the same considerations we have in Canada. So in Canada, we've got, you know, some options to insulate the roof really well, insulate the floor really well. That's relatively cost effective to do. In terms of heating, a lot of people just use electric heat like me. If they have a source for electricity, or they can use, we have little wood stoves that we've partnered with that are made here in Canada. Some people will use propane. There's a lot of really good options for wall mount propane heating now. So kind of anything that applies to like an off-grid kind of tiny home scenario works really well in a bunkie as well. Yeah. And like I said, if you're not experiencing like, you know, full Minnesota winters, you can get by in most scenarios without having to do many modifications other than maybe a little bit of insulation.
Right. How did you take this from building one to launching a business? What aspects did you have to maybe learn or leaned on from your whatever you're doing at the time? And what did you design, build, and do everything yourself? Yeah, kind of how did maybe it get going like that?
Yeah, so I mean, the first one, like I said, I just kind of built for myself and scratched my own itch. And then where it grew from there was just we started selling them kind of like to friends and family in 2017. We incorporated the company. And then it was just responding to customer feedback of like, what's working? What do you want more of? And then we do some pretty good promotions within Canada. We do some larger scale kind of online promotions and they've worked really well. And so we've managed to kind of triple every year, more or less, since 2018. So yeah, it's been just been a kind of a more normie business growth curve, just where we, you know, if we see an opportunity, we'll go for it. So we recently purchased a factory. So I can make our own stuff. And I really am seeing like, you know, down the pipe as the world gets crazier and crazier. I think it's really important to have as much of a grip on your supply chain as you can. So we've really made steps to do that and invested heavily in making things local, making things North America, and not having to rely on things overseas. Cause I think that's going to become tighter and tighter and trickier and trickier.
Right. And a log cabin. So I'm assuming it's made out of wood. Yep. Is that maybe the primary material? What kind of wood is it? Maybe you could tell me a little bit about what kind of wood we're dealing with here and what, don't know if there are any sort of intricacies to working with different kinds of wood or the wood business right now. I'm not
sure. The wood, I mean, the wood business is like similar to the Bitcoin chart. It's like up and to the right in terms of lumber cost. So we kind of settled on spruce. Like, so there's like kind of many things you can build out of, but in general, pine is kind of too flimsy, too, not dense enough. Most like construction grade stuff is made out of SPF, which is like heavy duty spruce, pine, and fir. But you generally avoid pine. So like if you pick up a crappy piece of furniture, it's super light. That's generally a pine piece of furniture, you know. Spruce is a little bit denser. You can use hardwoods as well, but the cost to benefit ratio isn't as good. So we've kind of just zoomed in on premium grade spruce. So we have to really make sure we're buying high quality stuff. You can't just kind of use like off the Home Depot shelf stuff. You have to really order premium stuff so you don't have any weird bends and too many knots. And then beyond that, just in the factory, we can kind of quality control things as they go through.
Oh, awesome. And what have been some of the evolutions in the models? And are there more than one size to, you know, to the bunkies?
Yeah, we've really like niched in in the Canada bylaws are like anything under 10 square meters is like 107 square feet. We've niched in on that really hard, but we can do larger things too. So the main iterations we make every year is like, you know, what do you guys want to see? What do you want more of? And usually it's bigger windows, taller lofts. So one workaround to get under that 10 square meters. So 10 square meters or like 100 square feet, we'll call it, is like basically a small, medium-ish bedroom. You know, you can fit like a queen bed, maybe a king, but a king will take up most of that space. So the more you can kind of cram into that, the better. So we've developed bunkies with like a big overhanging loft that can kind of cheat around that. People love that idea. And then we've also developed like engineering. We have an engineering capabilities where we can have an engineered stamped drawing that someone could present to their town if they want to go the permit route. So they can do larger stuff. And I mean, a lot of people just buy them, build them and throw them up. Free people don't ask. That happens a lot too. So that's a dimension to this too. If you're in an area where no one's ever going to see it, you can get away with a little more.
Yeah, I love that.
Part risk tolerance. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that in a little bit. What is the building process like? We've kind of mentioned that it was easy to assemble, but like, can we get into that a little bit? How long is this going to take me? Do I need any tools? Do I need to know how to build anything? What if I'm not handy?
Yeah, I'd say like it's good to have one handy person in the crew. You know, like if you're complete, you know, you've never swung a hammer, this might not be the project for you. But like me as a generally, I give myself like a 6 out of 10 as a handy person. I was able to build one myself within about a week. End, I'd say. So give yourself like a couple days for most of our kits. There's really good videos, there's really good instructions. And in terms of tools, you need like a hammer, a drill, a bunch of ladders are helpful. Mm-hmm. There's no cutting involved because everything's pre-cut. So if you've assembled IKEA furniture, think of this as a bigger, more quality scale project.
So if I wanted to maybe build this off grid, I want it delivered somewhere, maybe not off grid. I want to take it there myself.
Okay.
What do I need how many trips do I, am I a pickup truck? Do I need?
So the kits themselves, like we sell kind of flat pack kits. So picture like a big skid of lumber, essentially with the windows and doors and everything embedded inside. So you do need like a truck and like a trailer ideally to haul that in. We also do shipping like North American wide directed, either to a large city, like a depot where you can pick up from or to your door. So in terms of like getting it to you, like if let's say you want to pick it up from like, say your nearest city, and then you want to drive into the bush and no one knows where it is, that can be arranged for sure.
Right.
But you need a trailer. You couldn't just throw it in the back of the pickup.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. And in terms of if I really want to trick it out, wherever it is, whether I want to use it as an Airbnb, I want to use this as, KYC free living. I think either through partners or I'm not sure what you guys build, but is it what can I add to it? We've talked a little bit about custom roofing and insulation, probably staining. What about go over a little bit more like the heater and the toilet? Can I get a sauna?
Yeah, we make and sell saunas. We have a bunch of kind of bolt-on things like hot tubs and saunas, like wood-fired hot tubs and saunas. In terms of like I said, the heating, like the cleanest off-grid thing would be like a wood-burning micro stove. Then you could just chop down a tree locally and you'd be good to go for heat. In terms of like add-ons, like solar panels work really well with a small space. You don't have a ton of power requirements. So like for things like charging your cell phone, running your Bitcoin node and satellite, things like those little low use things like your laptop and things like that, you could get a couple solar panels on the roof and pull that off relatively easily. So we kind of partner with solar panel companies that can pull it off. And just the ideal that we're going for with Citadel Cabins is eventually it's like a big package shows up, you put together your bunkie, you deck it out with the other add-on components and it all kind of shows up. Right now we know bunkies really well. And then we're partnering with other companies to kind of complete the bigger picture.
I'm starting to get this image of, you know, future digital wildcats squatting on stranded and wasted oil and gas with a really freaking cool Citadel cabin next to them and a hot tub and a sauna, maybe some solar panels, maybe a wood burning stove and kind of having a nice quiet life. That sounds pretty, pretty good to me. Did you guys end up on TV? On was it Dragon's Den?
Yeah. So for the American listeners, you're probably familiar with like Shark Tank.
Yeah.
So we have our own version. We actually had Kevin O'Leary on it first. Kevin O'Leary and Robert Herjavec were like originally on CBC's Dragon's Den. And so then, it's basically, it's a similar version as Shark Tank. So we were approached by the producer of the show about auditioning. So we auditioned last year, 2021, and then we filmed in May. And then the episode just came out about 3 months ago in Canada. So
what was that process like? Was that a lot of fun?
It was cool. Like it was cool. I mean, we went and built a bunkie in the studio and then we wheeled it into this huge bay door to do the pitch. Then we wheeled it out and deconstructed it. And then we ended up selling that exact kit to one of the dragons, which was nice. For a Canadian, it's a big deal. I'm sure the Americans are like, ah, whatever. It's not Shark Tank, but it was, you know, it's a national show. It's probably one of the most popular shows in Canada. So it's been a big boost to kind of our notoriety up in Canada, and helped out with sales as well. And, you know, I think they edited the show to make us look pretty good. I think they gave us a good edit.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious what the last 2 or 3 years have been like, for this kind of business of, you know, reactions or inquiries from customers changed? Has it just been more of the same?
It's been a heightened thing. I think the appeal of a cabin in the woods has really gone up in the past years. There's been a refocusing. The people that didn't give a crap about their family continue to give a crap about the family, but the people that love their family, want to be with their family, want that even more now. So the Bunkie is a bridge for a lot of these people to be able to get together. So it's become more important. And I think they've reprioritized things. They can't go on expensive trips in general. So they've kind of reallocated that cash to things like a Bunkie, for sure. And then, I mean, like I said, the off-grid people, the people that really want to get out or have a plan B that's an escape in the woods, that's become more apparently immediately needed. So, you know, that your whole vision of like the cypherpunk people in the oil field, like people are creating that with our product now. And maybe they're not moving out there, living out there full time, but it's there and they know they can get to it. So we're kind of connecting people that have maybe a rural land with people that want to have an escape avenue. So that's another dimension of Citadel Cabins. It's not just about selling the bunkies. It's about maybe I have land that could house this scenario. Maybe I have just capital I want to invest that I want to kind of create the scenario, and then maybe I want to build it myself, or maybe I just want to rent it for the weekend. And kind of we're kind of partnering with the different Citadel people, the emergent Citadel kind of thing. You know, you can throw 5 or 6 bunkies, you know, you're going to rent them out and make money. And then you can kind of have like a little, you know, rent the Bitcoin or Citadel experience maybe, and see, you know, to what level you want, how deep you want to go with it. So we're kind of connecting those things together as well right now.
Yeah. So kind of building on that a bit, I guess. So it's like, maybe someone has a lot of land, and in that regard, they, you know, acres and acres of land, and they could kind of drop this cabin or bunkie. And, but maybe there are people who want to kind of, rent or get away from where they are, so they could escape to that place. So that'd be another track or avenue within the Citadel Cabins, program.
Yeah.
And then, so you have like a landowner, investor, the renter. So people, I guess, maybe they don't own the land and from the investor, and maybe they don't want to rent, but they do want to be a part of building this network of sort of this sort of, I see it as like almost a Bitcoin railroad or like an underground railroad.
Yeah.
And then another avenue you guys are exploring is people who, you know, maybe want to be involved and they want to provide support via labor.
Yeah. Like they're fun to build, right? Like there's something cool about getting together some people and just putting something like this together. You get a real sense of accomplishment. Like you walk away after that weekend, like, hey, look at what we built. Right.
Yeah.
So my experience is, you know, my experience with Bitcoin is they tend to be generous, kind of gregarious guys and girls. And so I thought, like, let's open, like within Bunkie Life, we have some charitable aspects of what we do. And so we'll often get approached by like Make-A-Wish. I don't know if you guys have it in America, but it's like, you know, sick kid needs something and you make his wish happen. For whatever reason, they want to bunkie these kids, right? So we'll get a bunch of volunteers together. We'll build this kid their bunkie, and everyone gets a really great feeling. I'm like, man, it'd be cool to get a bunch of Bitcoiners together. Let's help somebody build their Citadel, almost like the Amish used to do with their barn raising, you know? And just throw up a couple of bunkies for somebody in their backyard. And then you're kind of, you know, you can put a little sweat equity into something like that, build a relationship. Maybe you get something out of it, or maybe it's just like learn about the process. I think that type of thing, I'm all about. I think the digital community that's emerging around Bitcoin is fantastic, but there's something to be said for like shaking somebody's hand. You know them, you've done something, you've worked on a project together. I think that's the type of kind of bigger picture I want to help be a small part of.
Yeah. I really love the idea of this network of cabins that could kind of provide a retreat or an escape. that is run in sort of a way, you know, with an ethos I think Bitcoiners would appreciate.
Yeah.
And I think not only could it be for the individual Bitcoiner, but I think you could also then do sort of like seminars or conferences or retreats, group retreats at these cabins. I think that would be awesome. I think also I love the idea of just dropping a home office in the backyard.
Yeah.
I think in just with just a lot of way lifestyles are changing for whether mandates or not, like I think a lot more people want to work from home or are working from home by choice.
Yeah, working from home is amazing until you realize that like the kids and everyone else is also in the home.
Yeah.
But if you can get a little bit of separation, it's a lot easier to pull that off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge. And I think for a lot of people to find that separation, that meant maybe going into the garage or the basement or the attic or a room and those rooms aren't really designed for peace and quiet.
A buddy of mine was telling me about his work from home is work from car. He like goes out to his car.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think if you can get that separation, but I think then you can also cultivate that environment. And I think this provides a way to do that really easily, affordably. And on the easy part, like you can do it yourself or with some friends, maybe grab a few beers. What sort of other reactions have you gotten from customers?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really gets me up in the morning for Bunky Life, especially, is just like the real stories about families. They built it together. And then, they kind of all had times together and this Bunky kind of made a way for them all to be together. Like that feeling on Christmas morning when like all the brothers and sisters and mom and dad and everyone's there all together. That's really hard to get. And as we all get older, those moments are even trickier and harder to find. I've got like a brother in like overseas. I've got, I've left the country of Canada and I'm now in a different country like we're all over the map right now. And so those moments, if the Bunky's the difference between getting everyone together or not, like those are meaningful things for us for sure. And we get a lot of those kind of testimonials and stories from our clients.
What about in terms of the Airbnb users?
Everyone's doing the Airbnb thing is crushing it. Like just, so I initially got into this, the whole Bunky Life thing was like, oh, everyone's going to want to do exactly what I'm doing, which is like renting these out and just printing money. Right. And yet a portion of people did do that. And I think Bitcoiners, and this is why I'm thinking Citadel Cabins, might have a little bit more success than I thought I'd have with the Airbnb thing. It's because like the average person is not entrepreneurial at all. And they're not as soon as that someone says like, oh, there might be, like the government might give you a hard time. It's like, then they're just out. They don't even want to push it or even like investigate. So I just did it, just built my bunkies, started renting them out, didn't worry too much about it. And it's been a non-issue for me for like a few years. Everyone that's done the same thing has paid off their bunkie super quick. And it's a really flexible, scalable kind of thing that they do. From the campgrounds that have purchased from us, the golf courses, the individual, like just, I have a random bunkie in my backyard and one little composting toilet bathroom thing. Everyone's crushing it. No one, to my knowledge, has like not paid their bunkie off in a year.
What about the people who are renting the Airbnb from the owners? Yeah. So what has their experience or feedback been like as versus, they could be at a hotel or renting an Airbnb in a house?
Like, so, I mean, from my own experience, we have a really high rating on Airbnb. We're still like the number one Airbnb in my area. I've kind of shut my Airbnbs down, but we're still like, have a really high rating. And everyone of our clients that's done it in their own way, they take the bunkie as the kind of the foundation and they build an experience around that. Maybe they have a lake or maybe they have, something cool. Like somebody has their bunkie on an alpaca farm and somebody else is like, their bunkie's on a farm with a bunch of goats running around. Like, right. I don't know, whatever you want to build around, it's cool. But in their own way, they're all very successful with kind of the foundation being like a cool cabin you can build quickly for, relatively inexpensively. And quickly turn around into a rental. Like I literally built my bunkie, the very first one. I literally built it and I had guests that next week. Like it was that quick of a,
Right, right.
They actually stayed on an air mattress. They didn't have a mattress yet. It was a literal Airbnb. It was an air mattress.
Right. What are these composting toilets like? Should I be nervous?
Oh, they're actually not too bad. I've had one for a couple of years. And this is one option, right? You don't have to do that. You could get a some people have like a little adjacent bathroom in their house they'll let people use or something like a, you know, but my scenario is I've got like a kind of outhouse style thing with a little cool composting toilet, and they've come a long way since the 80s is what I've heard. And they like don't smell too bad. They're relatively low maintenance. They're not too bad.
Yeah. And it's come up a couple of times. So it sounds like you've moved left Canada.
Yeah. So I have three kids and one on the way. And so we left Canada in September. I kind of was thinking, things are getting a little dicey here. So we got out as of September, and then we moved to Florida.
Well, I got to ask, because you're one of the few people I've spoken to who's done it with kids. And not like newborn or very, very, very young. But so what was that experience like? I mean, it sounds like you're a longtime Canadian.
I'm a lifelong Canadian.
I imagine you had a lot of friends and family. Everyone in the family had a lot of friends and family there. Was this a decision long time in the making? Was this abrupt? What was the move like? Was it easy? Was it hard?
Yeah, it was definitely difficult. I mean, so we've looked into a couple different options. I've been following Katie, the Russian, for a while. So we went actually this past summer, we went and got our permanent residency in Panama. I went and did that whole thing. We realized like we got to have some plan B and C. So Panama looks a little more like a plan C in terms of like the way things are shaping up there. Everyone's wearing a mask outside. There's a relatively kind of atmosphere of compliance. And that's just like my observation. I'm sure it might be different depending on the area. So we have that in our back pocket. And then, I mean, just the momentum seemed to be like free people are moving to Florida, free people are moving to Texas. So it was one of those two options. We just kind of honestly, like two nights before we went, we were about to close on a house and we were about to leave the country. And it was like, we weren't sure if we were going to go. Just like, it was that 50-50. My in-laws live with us in Canada. They actually sold their house and moved in with us. Wow. And it was going really well. So we left a lot behind for sure. I'm optimistic things might come back to normal. We might be able to freely traverse again, but I don't know. I think that the interstate or inner country travel is going to be the last thing to let go of. And I think it's going to be, I just think that they're going to be clamping down more on people that want to live sovereignly and they want to live freely. So my thinking is that I want to be, you're eventually going to have to pick a hill to die on, and I'd rather do it with people that are better armed than Canadians are and are a little more freedom minded than Canadians are. Still love all my Canadian friends and family and still love the people of Canada. But you know, we're the people that, just kind of, you know, didn't really fight the British. We're kind of like the go along to get along kind of people. And, I don't know if that's going to be a positive thing in the next decade.
Yeah. I mean, I ask and I struggle with this myself because we're going through a very similar move. And I found it to be one of the hardest things we've ever done. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of, logistics and, you know, I've moved a lot in my life and I just never did it with, you know, wife and kids before, really, or my wife, when we did it the first time, my son was really little. So he wasn't even aware that we were moving. And, you know, it's kind of been really difficult to kind of make the decision, to kind of go through the process and then figure out where to live, where we're going. How'd you guys maybe choose Florida, if I may say it? And has it been what you were hoping for? And something I struggle with is, I'm trying to control the things that I can. So like, even if I don't like love everybody or everything about where I'm going, I'm trying to, there are some reasons I'm going, I want to be close to my family. My parents happen to be there and they're not doing well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and on some fronts I'm getting more freedom. I'm sure it's not perfect.
You know? Yeah. I mean, the reality is like right now, if you look at the world, and I'm no expert here, but there's no obvious solution, right? There's no obvious escape. So you're choosing between a series of different trade-offs, right? So I can see anyone making the argument, like maybe El Salvador is what you want to get behind. Maybe other, you know, Central, South America, maybe, you know, whatever it is. I can see anybody making a rational argument. I just think you got to ultimately just admit that you're choosing between trade-offs, right? So if you're going to have to stay in say like a New York or an Ontario, or a Quebec, God forbid, then just do it with eyes wide open and be like, okay, I'm making certain trades. Like if you have to be around your parents or whatever, like, you know,
yeah,
that's something you got to do. Just for us, it seemed to make sense. And the reality is, like, you know, no decision you make locationally is permanent unless you get locked in a country. Like that, the main factor was me is like, I just, in September, I was like, we're not going to be able to leave if we don't leave now.
Hmm.
That was my main thinking. And I was proven correct. And a lot of, like Safe and a lot of the guys making all these predictions, I'm trying to think of who else in the Bitcoin community was like spot on. Like Joel was pretty solid on a lot of these things really early on. And so, you know, the people that have been predicting things, I think they should be gaining credibility. And as Bitcoiners, we've been right about a lot of things, you know? And so my thinking is like, if the Bitcoin people, some of the smartest people in the world are saying something's high probability of happening, you should be paying attention and put yourself in the perspective of like, okay, can I mentally go 50 years ahead and look back? What should I be doing now? Because we look back at the people in the 1930s and 1940s, and we think from our historical context, oh, it was so obvious they should have done that. Right? Like you're Jewish in Germany. Yeah. Obviously you're getting out. Mm-hmm. You're a business owner in Russia, right? During the Bolshevik Revolution. Yeah. You get out, right? You're a farmer in the Ukraine back in, you know, you get out. Right. But all those people have the exact same things. Like my life is here. My family's here. Like, all, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. At least we have the ability to cross a border with our life savings in our head. That is enormously, I'm a personal testament to that. Right. I was able to leave with the majority of, majority of my net worth unharassed, you know, that's huge. So we have that benefit and we have that foresight. I think that we should, you know, take a perspective of like, okay, yeah, we have those hardships that you mentioned. We have all the social reasons to stay. But what would you tell somebody in like 1930 to do?
Yeah.
If that's what you think's coming. And I do think that's what's coming.
I agree. And I think about the parallels to the 1930s a lot.
Yeah.
I still feel like we're in like 19, maybe last year, I probably said 1931. I think now probably 1932 or 1933. Yeah. There's just so many parallels. I also think it's, you know, I think that if you believe in certain things and maybe in your own freedom and sovereignty and independence, then there's just some things that like just are repulsive when, that maybe like, I think people who believe in those things can't tolerate certain things being taken away from them as much as maybe other people can.
Yeah.
And I think so then it becomes a matter of principle. But with Canada, I just can't think how it's a very different situation than most countries, I think, are at this point with people being able to cross borders.
Yeah. It's extreme. But you notice how no one publicly is condemning Canada.
But I noticed that.
In the world.
Yeah. But I noticed that a lot of Canadians have had to flee essentially or become expats or refugees. And a lot of Bitcoiners from Canada and other Canadians, whether they're Bitcoiners or not. I'm kind of leaving and voting with my feet, but I'm still staying within the 50 states of America.
Yeah. I mean, that system is so ingenious. I didn't fully appreciate that about America until this happened essentially. And you're able to test different strategies, 50 different strategies. It's ingenious, you know. It's one of the reasons that America is so Lindy.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, you know, kind of running the business that you do, it's like when I talk about like ethos, it's like I can't imagine someone running your business staying in Canada knowing the laws that and the rules that were changing. It's like your business is focused on location independence. So I wonder how much the business or how much Bitcoin played into, you know, your thought process there. But like, let's go back a little bit. When did you find Bitcoin? What's your rabbit hole story?
Yeah. So essentially, I kind of started watching it, I think in 2015, maybe. And just like, what is this kind of crazy thing? And I somehow heard about it. And then in 2016, I started listening to some podcasts, kind of bought a little bit of Bitcoin. Just more like I came in for the gains essentially, right? Like, oh, there's some crazy volatility. It seems low right now. And then just realized that like there's such a deeper rabbit hole to go down. So I was kind of there learning about it, mostly learning, kind of just listening to people on Twitter. I got back into Twitter as a result of Bitcoin and started following like the Bcashers and the same people and just contrasting it. I really found Bitcoin Twitter to be a super valuable thing for. You could throw ideas out there, people would criticize them. You could criticize other people's idea and get a kind of trying to grok this thing that we're all trying to grok that no one's really got a full handle on. And so that was helpful. And then really after the whole split between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin, and I realized I was dabbling. I had a little bit of ETH and stuff, and I'm like, no, like Bitcoin it's the signal here and everything else is the noise. That was really 2017. And I just kind of went all in on that and subsequently started basically any profit we made in any of our businesses, we try to put on the balance sheet. There's that whole economic end of things, but the social element of it is like, you know, I went to Bitblong Boom in 2019, met the other people. And that was another moment where I was like, wow, like these are really intelligent, smart people that are, like way smarter than I am. Right. Like, I'm not. So I look at my role in the greater ecosystem is like, you know, I can make real things, and I can help those come together. So I'd rather make them for Bitcoiners, right? I'd rather help that. And I'm never going to code. I'm never going to be like a core dev or even like somebody creating on layer two or three. Like I'm just not smart enough, but I can make a lot of money in the real world. And I can suck as much of that as into the Bitcoin black hole as I can. And I think I can create products and services that are going to benefit the wider ecosystem. And I'd rather give it to Bitcoiners now than, have a bunch of crazy people, like Bunky Life is a very much a normie business. We sell to government employees, but I'd love to have Citadel Cabins be like, you know, no government employees allowed, just Bitcoiners. That's kind of the vision.
Yeah. It's really, I think a really interesting convergence, your background with, you know, sort of the business, Bunky Life, the cabins, Bitcoin, and what that does is, because I've seen location sovereignty become a really bigger platform in my mind over the last 2 years, obviously. Yeah. I really felt like when I found Bitcoin and I just stacked my first few sats, I gained this new superpower. I didn't have to have a lot of my money into it, but I just found this new tool that helped me. I love the unit of account aspect of it. I can make better calculations. Mm-hmm. I like the low time preference aspect of it and using that as the unit of account and the obviously the gains and I came for the gains. I'm not going to lie, but yeah. Once I understood those other properties, it wasn't the amount of the gains or the amount I had in it. But then after a little while, the more I learned about it and the more conviction I had, I was like, all right, I solved everything in the world now.
And yeah. We definitely have that little bit of hubris. Like, okay, Bitcoin fixes this. So therefore Bitcoin fixes everything.
Right. I mean, and I found rules without rulers. And then the rulers said, no, we're going to lay down some new rules that you didn't agree to.
Now you can't leave our country.
Yeah. And then, you know, so I don't think I would have been prepared for any of that though, without the studying I was doing to gain conviction in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So learning about monetary history, learning about capital controls, coin clipping, all those things helped me understand what was happening around me and what my threat vectors were when it came to financial systems. And then overlaying that as I do a lot, I hope to do with the show is then, okay, well, what about my physical and location sovereignty? You know, because a lot of times people talk about just either whether it's first principles or gun rights, and you see it with protesting. It's like, what is a protest if you can't go home and actually threaten real violence? If you know, it's not really a protest if they can stop it and squash your voice, or the state's not scared of you. And so you start looking at all these other different things and locations become, I mean, I had Katie, the Russian, on the show and talking about just either national sovereignty or national passports and this aspect of it though. And then this really blew me away with just KYC free living. That was a whole spin on things I never really thought about. And I still really think a lot about that application of this tool. And then I think just at the base layer, I mean, I love the idea of any, myself included, adding space to the house.
Yeah. There's a lot to it. I just want to be clear, like the Citadel Cabins concept, we're just really one node in what has to be a bigger network of people that want to create this freedom for other people. right? So if you have the space to do it, you could have a KYC free house in your backyard, or not house, but you could have a KYC little micro house, right, in your backyard. That's something that probably a lot of the listeners could do if they can talk their wife into it. And then if you have access capital, you could invest into that kind of concept as well. How can I create a world where there is some decentralized housing and location sovereignty? Because I think that's that, you know, there's the whole idea like going to the wilderness and build your own thing. That's like one dimension of it, but really it doesn't have to be that extreme. It could just be like as simple as like, you know, you've got a buddy with a bunkie in their backyard that you could slip away to, or like, that's kind of the thing that I think has to be happening on a decentralized level. And I applaud the effort that people like Joel are doing with, you know, the Citadel building and that sort of thing too. And I think my thought process is like, I can be one slice of that pie, but I think we all have to be a slice of that pie to create that larger pie. And how that's going to look like is probably going to be in a way none of us can actually accurately predict.
Yeah.
Because some is just going to be forced by need. Like there's probably going to be in the next 3-4 years, maybe even sooner, a scenario where just people are having to flee, like literally flee, you know, like I kind of fled Canada, but like, you know, Ukrainians are now fleeing Ukraine. Like that's a fleeing scenario. And that's going to be, I mean, we've never experienced that in most of the Western world, and especially in North America, we've never experienced like a scenario where we like legit fled our house with like nothing on it, but our back, wow, clothes on our back. Right. So my thinking is like, how can we be the people that are like planning ahead if that happens? And if it doesn't, well, you still have a cool spot that you can get away to, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of deep. It seems like you're just applying this sort of framework, especially around decentralization, to most of your life. We were talking a little bit before. I mean, you're homeschooling your kids. What has that been like? Was that a big choice? How long have you been doing that? And do you have any advice?
I mean, we've been homeschooling our kids since before it was cool. So like even before COVID, I was homeschooled a little bit as part of my education as a kid. Really the majority of it is I want to impress my values onto my kids. I want to be delivered the values that they get. And so part of that is just like not allowing them to be in a different environment. So yeah, I'm building my own little bubble around my kids for sure. Of my own choosing. So there's like that dimension of it, the moral dimension. And then, because we're entrepreneurs, we travel a lot even prior to this. It was just nice to be able to like, we're going to Florida for next month, right? Or whatever, even prior to COVID. So just the ability to travel was a priority for our family. It's not easy. Like my wife works in my business as well. So she's got to kind of, she's got a lot to juggle. It's not an easy thing, but I think it's worth it for our family. And I would encourage other families to don't get too caught up in like the downsides of homeschooling. Like there's also a lot of fun times too. And it's kind of fun having your kids around. Like my daughter like does a lot of our videos with us. She's involved in the business. We kind of bring her on business kind of conversations and stuff. So she kind of gets to learn firsthand because she's here when we're doing business with like between 9 to 5. So
what about moving and traveling? We tend to travel a lot. We're actually going through our first big move in a long time. What is that like with the kids? Is it exciting? Do they worry about maybe losing friends? Are they excited to make new friends? Is it easy to get acclimated?
Yeah, I mean, my kids make friends wherever they go really well. And they also keep up with their friends over like my one daughter has like a Panamanian friend from when we went to Panama that she like keeps up with. They chat once a week kind of thing. Like it's not easy. Like traveling with little kids sucks. Like there's just no way around that. Like bring your baby on a plane. It's just, you know, like I think that's what hell's like, is just traveling with babies on a plane. But overall, like if you just decide you're going to do it, you'll figure out how to do it. Yeah. That was at least our experience, right? It wasn't the funnest thing in the world to travel internationally with kids, but, especially like it's probably easier if you didn't have to go through TSA with a mask on and like, you know, a million other things like that. But we thought we would travel while we still could. And I think we were proven right on that one for sure.
Yeah.
So we're not going to do a lot of intense traveling right now. We're just like holing up in Florida right now.
Yeah. We've been doing a lot of traveling. We've been going back and forth to Florida for years because my parents are there. So the kids are kind of, you know, really used to the planes. We give them a screen usually, and then they're good to go. And then We just drove back and forth to Florida with the dog, and yeah. That was a lot of fun. And they were great. You know, there's USB chargers now in the back row, so they could kind of be occupied most of the time. And I find the more we drag them through traveling, the more they just kind of roll with it. Once in a while, my son will look up and be like, "Can we take a plane the rest of the way?" You know, but you know, it's been a lot of fun. I think we built a lot of memories. One thing I wanted to ask you about, so you said you were a Bit Block Boom in 2019. Did you get to see Bitstein's talk in person?
I had no idea what a Bitcoin conference was. I like wore a suit the one day, like I was an idiot, right? So I kind of became buddies with this and I hung out with him most of the weekend. I was in the very front row wearing a suit during his controversial speech that like made everyone pissed off. It was a fantastic speech. I remember thinking like, dude, I've never thought about memes on any other level than just like, ha, this is a hilarious meme. I mean, like for a speech that I'm pretty sure he wrote the night before while we were out drinking, it was pretty dynamic speech. And I still think about that speech a lot. I mean, the power of memes and like the idea of like always be selling Bitcoin and just like, I mean, like it just changed my whole, and like, we don't need to be debating shit because we should be pumping Bitcoin 24/7. I mean, that speech is something you can go back to and be like, that was a brilliant speech.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to cap it off with a little bit more about how people can get involved as an investor, an owner, someone who has expertise or just wants to provide labor. What are sort of the avenues there? So I just think that not only I think are there opportunities for people to just drop that cabin in the back of the house in the woods on their property on a lake, they could rent it out. But I think there's something to be built and explored here on a much deeper, more long-term level.
I mean, right now it's just Citadel Cabins as a concept is just a landing page. You know, what are those five scenarios you just mentioned? Are you in, you know, and then give me some way I can vet you, right? Like you're not some spook. So that's kind of the it's just a very simple thing. You can use a Proton Mail account. I'd prefer that if it's an anonymous email, and then I'll just kind of do my due diligence on you and likewise. I'm kind of an open book, so you can kind of do your homework on us, but you know, I'm just kind of looking for 3-4 people that can kind of get the ball rolling. I've got a few kind of irons in the fire in terms of like, who's going to be the first kind of people that kind of get it started. And then ideally, like I just want to plug into things that already exist. Like if, you know, the Oshi app is kind of, you know, maybe it's something like the Oshi app where it's like, you just kind of book a thing online, boom. It's like that type of thing. You could go rent it out. And in a really, I want it to be very decentralized. That would be my goal. So kind of get the thing started, get a few pieces of that network going, and then just let it run itself. And then maybe I could sell cabins to people. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you can find that landing page at citadelcabins.com. I like the idea too of not just maybe the mining, the digital wildcatting, but around maybe regenerative farming. It could be sort of an Airbnb sort of retreat on the farm. As we were talking about before, how people love to visit the farms and play with the animals or the goats, the cows. But at the same time, we can sort of be taking the land back in that regard and sort of getting a dual use there. I really encourage people to check it out. It's just an extremely practical, affordable, easy way to expand your own current location sovereignty and independence. So, and I love the KYC free stuff. So this has been so dope, David. I really appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you enjoy the Bitcoin Matrix podcast, all I ask is that you tell your friends and family about the show and write a 5-star review on iTunes. Those are the best way to help the show grow and gain new listeners. This episode was brought to you by CipherSafe and Ledin. And thank you for listening. Stack stats, stay humble, and stay laser focused out there. This is Cedric. Peace.